Smokey. Roll them. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hanlon, joined by...
And I'm Neil Diamond, and I'm outraged, very outraged, that all the episodes we're covering today have to do with Al Jolson. You know, as you know, I was in the remake of The Jazz Singer in 1979, a much better movie because it wasn't as racist. And I'm absolutely outraged that all the ones we're doing today involve... lots of Al Jolson jokes. I'm not here for it. Not once or twice or three times at all. But we're going to do it anyway. Because that's what we do. Anyway. And I'm Jordan.
We're doing songs about the radio. No. Well.
Songs?
No. No, we're not.
We're not doing songs.
No, we're doing shorts about the radio. Shorts. About, yeah, thanks.
Thanks,
I'll
Neil.
Do shorts about the raid.
Tonight!
Yes, all right. So, last week, we covered shorts that were about television, and now we're going to take a step back into a medium and talk about the radio. More specifically, shorts about radio stars of the 40s.
And as you know, video did in fact kill the radio star. So before, after all these cartoons were made, video killed them.
And then people took the video to the shorts and restored them. So now we can talk.
Yes.
So it single-handedly killed it and restored it at the exact same time.
Right. So like Sony did to Ghostbusters.
Exactly. So... All right, so the three shorts that we will be covering today are I Love to Singa, The Woods Are Full of Cuckoos, and Swooner Crooner.
A very eclectic mix of radio-related. I mean, some of these are more specific to the actual medium of radio, and some are just about these people were music stars at the time, and this is a cartoon about them.
Yeah.
But I think that it's definitely, like, all three of them would not exist if it weren't for... the radio in general. Like, obviously radio predates TV in terms of allowing for celebrity and like you know, performance stars to be, you know, to give their medium to people all around the world. A lot of TV stars that we talked about last week, like Jack Benny and Groucho Marx and even Albert Costello, who we haven't talked about in a while, thank God, got their start due to radio. And you know, it works for people. It's a great medium if you're a very dialogue-based comedian. It doesn't exactly work for people like who are a bit more like visual-based. But for all the fast-talking vaudevillians of the 1930s and 40s, it was their Valhalla. And as well as just being an excuse to, you know, show music. So, you know, all three of these touch that in different points.
So the radio was invented around the 1890s, where a man named James Caan...
James Caan?
No, James Clerk Maxwell showed in theoretical and mathematical form in 1864 that electromagnetic waves could propagate through free space. Also, a funny character who came around in 1888 was... Heinrich Rudolf Hertz, who, star of Citizen Kane's inspiration, was able to conclusively prove transmitted airborne electromagnetic waves in an experiment confirming Maxwell's theory of electromagnetism.
Riveting.
Yes.
Let's talk about some owls falling down.
Yes.
Let's talk about a fat person stuck in a trapdoor.
Yes.
Okay. We're losing it already. The first cartoon we are covering today is a sentimental favorite of mine from the early eras of Cartoon Network showing the Looney Tunes. And it's rare because usually they wouldn't really emphasize the Merry Melodies era of Looney Tunes. So it's rare to see one before 1940 show up on one of those marathons. But this one, I Love to Sing It, was on there a lot and a sentimental favorite because of a lot of reasons, honestly, but which I'll get into. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those rare music-based early cartoons that still has a lot of appeal for contemporary Looney fans. And it's also one that a lot of the Looney Tunes people are still very proud of and will reference in contemporary projects. So it's an interesting case, and I'm interested to see what we had to say about it. So this was released on July 16th, 1936. I'm just going to warn you all, a lot of my on this days have to do with Japan in this one. So for instance, on this one, Yasuo Fukuda, who was Japan's 91st prime minister, was born on that day. In theaters, because I like to include like what was in theaters at the time, the movie Showboat, which was directed by the great director James Whale, according to accounts of Whale's life, including, but not limited to, the movie Gods and Monsters, which I covered for Varicon. James Whale was proudest of Showboat, especially compared to his horror movie efforts. He really enjoyed making this one. It was one of his last great moments of filmmaking started. It was also a premiere showcase for a famous African-American singing legend named by the name of Paul Robeson, who sings the classic Old Man River in that movie Showboat. So, you know, it's a classic movie for a lot of reasons, even if not all of it has aged especially well. Because it's from the 30s, and if you're a movie from the 30s that hasn't aged well, then that's every movie from the 30s other than The Wizard of Oz. But unless you have any other rebuttals to that, I mean, there's probably one or two. Like Angels with Dirty Faces, I think, has aged pretty well. There's some other ones. Top Hat has aged relatively well. All right, anyway, I'm rambling. This I Love to Sing It has direction from Tex Avery. The script is Tex Avery and Rich Huygen. I can only assume he's Australian because Huygen, you know, that's Australian. It sounds Australian to me. You can stop me from riffing at any time.
No. However, what an exciting story for our friend, Australian immigrant. He comes here looking for a brand new start, and he finds himself as a writer for this cartoon, and not to jump to a head, the story's pretty good in this. So,
I mean, I don't think he was actually Australian. I was making that joke just for the hell of it, because there's a lot of Hogans who are Australian. But either way, the story is really good in this. I also want to note some voice acting notes. Billy Bletcher plays the L's father.
Yes.
Obviously, he was Warner's number one gun for hire in this period. But also, Ted Pierce is responsible for playing the radio host, Jack Bunny. So, one of their own guys as well. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that the song itself, I Love to Sing It, is yet another Warner catalog one. Because, you know, the early Merry Melodies and Looney Tunes types in this era were all showcasing songs that Warner had the rights to. And so it was a crossover between radio and, you know, the visual department. And so I Love to Sing It. It just came off of being featured in a feature film called The Singing Kid as a duet between Cab Calloway and Al Jolson. Cab Calloway, if you've ever seen The Blues Brothers, the bit in the end where the whole band plays Minnie the Moocher, and Cab Calloway is the guy who sings lead on that. He's world famous, one of the pioneering African-American singers. He is outstanding, and he shows up in another one we cover in this episode. But a lot of early animation and a lot of early short form stuff has Calloway's name all over it, because when I was in cinema studies, there was a very early Betty Boop cartoon that was like a Halloween kind of thing that was Minnie the Moocher. Yes. And that was Cab Calloway singing. Mm-hmm. So he's very storied in this early era of film and short form film. But yeah, there was also a short form version of Cab Calloway and Al Jolson singing On Separate Rooftops, I Love to Sing It. So you can sort of insinuate that, oh yeah, it's the 1930s. You can't really have the white guy who makes fun, who profits off of black people and the black person on the same rooftop. They've got to be separate rooftops. You know, that's a little fishy there. But, and also the lead in this cartoon is named Owl Jolson. And this movie this cartoon is essentially an adaptation of The Jazz Singer, which had come out 9 years previous, was a big Warner Brothers smash hit. First feature-length movie was with sound, even though the whole film isn't exactly with sound. It's just sequences in it. And it's very racist.
Yep.
So I would, if you want to watch The Jazz Singer, I would honestly recommend the Neil Diamond version. Because it's not as racist. Actually, I have to check. I don't know if there's any bits of blackface in it.
Oh my God.
I'm checking right now.
And Jordan finds a photo of Neil Diamond blackface in 3, 2, 1.
Oh! No, not really. I don't think. The scene where Neil Diamond performs "You Back, Baby" in the Cinderella Club with an afro and black makeup on was actually done as a minor tribute to Al Jolson. Okay, never watch any version of The Jazz Singer, folks.
Oh, yep, there is a clip of it on YouTube.
I stand by it. It was a good idea at the time.
Oh, no.
I went out there looking really racist because I think I looked fine. But tonight, anyway.
I will apologize.
Contempt.
I will apologize.
Yeah. Contemporarily, Al Jolson in this song would feature in a lot of Looney Tunes projects, including Looney Tunes Show and the Back in Action video game, as well as, and this is actually really great, as well as in the very first ever aired episode of the Peabody Award-winning show South Park. There's a bit where, because the whole pilot episode of South Park is aliens coming to South Park and probing people. Mm-hmm. And so Eric Cartman is hit by like an alien laser beam and starts singing "I Love to Sing It." So it's a reference to this cartoon, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe because they couldn't get the rights to Ragtime Gal, because that's I think what they were trying to do. But
that's always the funniest thing to me, like, in watching like South Park and just finding, because like for example, the episode they did after 9/11. With,
oh my God, that is a full Looney Tunes.
It's a full Looney Tunes send up, and it's done so faithfully and so like with the utmost respect.
It's great.
It's like you wouldn't expect it from South Park, but they respect their idols over there at South Park.
Yeah, such respect and gratitude and honestly, award-winning grit there. The episode we're referring to is called Osama Bin Laden Has Farty Pants. So if you're going to, all the highbrows out there, if you're going to check that one out. We can do contrast as well. Okay, so getting into this. I still can't believe Neil Diamond actually did blackface. I feel so bad for starting the episode like this. All right. Okay, so the first gag, because this is a Tex Avery cartoon, is a sign gag. Because, you know, there's a sign on the door of the Owl's place, you know, the father being musician, clinician, and of course there's a butt in red lettering, and we pan down, no jazz. So, honestly, a character, especially an older character, not liking jazz, isn't that far off from a lot of 1930s, you know, snobbish kind of music personality. Because in the early ages of jazz, especially when it was as a black medium, essentially, the white majority of music was very much like, we don't like this yet. You know, there was a hesitation to enjoy it. And a matter of fact, and I found this out on QI. One of the early critics of jazz was, of course, Adolf Hitler, who resented jazz for becoming popular while being dominated by people who were not white. It's the same reason why Jesse Owens in 1936 made his skin rattle. Winning all those gold members. Anytime somebody, a person of color or, you know, a person of a different faith succeeds in a medium where he saw that they shouldn't, he would get really mad and start banning stuff left and right. So I think jazz music was banned in Germany during this era. So, you know, anyway.
That would have been a joke. The Great Dictator, Charlie Chaplin's film, I would love to see if just Charlie Chaplin as Schmeckel, like, listen to music, then all of a sudden the music turns into like a jazz type, and he just loses his shit.
You know, that sounds like something Chaplin would have done.
Yeah.
I will say. So, wouldn't shock me if he did something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. So, yeah. Anyway, Hitler didn't like jazz. Okay. The pan from the door through the keyhole right to the scene of the father pacing and waiting for eggs is fantastic animation.
Yeah.
Like, just really good fluid stuff, like, especially for 1936. Like, this is the early age of Looney Tunes as a unit. And the fact that they're doing really cool stuff like this early is awesome. I also love the dissolve to the father's pacing, wearing through the floor. That's really good. Okay, one of the great things about this cartoon is how everything operates under a musical motif of some sort. Like, lots of just little musical things in the background, or like the father checking the eggs after they've been laid, and how when he hits them, all of them produce ascending musical notes, except for the fourth, Al Jolson's, which produces a sour note. For people who enjoy music, especially music dictating an entire cartoon, this is a really good one. Like, most Merry Melodies are framed around an entire, like, song. But this is framed around an entire song and still allowed to breathe as, like, an actual cartoon. So it's really well spaced out. Okay. So these eggs of these the children of these two owls who both have German accents, like, thick sort of immigrant German accents. I don't know what point he's trying to make there, but whatever. German accents, because maybe this is Tex playing on, you know, the whole Germany banning jazz music. Maybe he knew. I don't know. But these eggs produce, you know, types of then palatable types of music. Like, one starts singing an aria of opera. Okay, that's good. One starts playing something on the violin. Okay, the other is like a classical music via flute. That works. And then, of course, jazz with Al Jolson, who immediately breaks into I Love to Sing It. And thus we get our plot. The parents are ashamed of Al Jolson for singing jazz, so they're going to attempt for him to embrace more classical music against his will, despite this being his heart song, in a way. To quote Happy Feet or whatever the fuck. I mean, we get this scene of Al Jolson defiantly singing a hymn of some sort as his mother plays the piano, and then breaking back into I Love to Sing It in between piano notes. Until the point where his father becomes frustrated.
Yeah, and I just love great animation. Actually, great animation and performance of the voice actor behind Al Jolson here. You can tell he's animated very well, sitting against his will. Like, his brow, which he doesn't have, but like a brow appears on his face whenever he's singing the forced music. And then immediately when he's off to sing, he immediately gets jumped up. He looks at the audience. You know, which I love that too, is that the entire time he's playing to an audience. Let it be us at home, right, or later when he goes to the radio show. He's always performing to a crowd of some sort.
Right. I am about to send something to the Discord.
You are? All right.
Yes, I am. Hang on. And that should work.
Oh.
Tonight. I couldn't rest until I found out what that looked like. And now I know.
And now I know.
And now I can never sleep at night.
And
yeah, and knowing is half the battle.
And God. Well, guys,
Jesus.
We're going to have the Chaos with no diamond. I'm sorry. I know Boston Red Sox fans love to sing Sweet Caroline at baseball stadiums. I know you guys love it.
Well, yes, of course. Red Sox fans are clearly like the status of taste. Like, if there's someone who's tasteful, it's people with Boston accents who yell and scream at people who are even remotely not white. I apologize to anyone listening in Boston. We're going to get killed for this one. I also really like this Billy Bletcher performance. Like, he doesn't, like, he uses a part of his voice that's more like to the throat a lot of the times. Like, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, that kind of bit. But this is really one of the few times where he uses the husk of his voice. Like, oh, 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 like that part. As this overbearing, angry father. I mean, just him saying the repeated line of, enough is too much. That is a great line. And I also love him throwing out Al with a string of name calling, turning red-faced, closing the door, then reopening it and going, phooey, and then slamming it again. That is Tex Avery for you. That is something that he does a lot, and it works here. And we get a good 30 seconds of him just of Al Jolson bopping along, singing I Love to Sing It. And, you know, it's fine. You know, it works. It works as a good solo piece. It's fine. But we as he found his own way, we wander into the real plot, which is the radio station auditions for Jack Bunny.
Yeah. Jack
and
Bunny.
And we get a montage.
Jack Bunny.
Yeah.
A pun so nice they did it twice.
Yeah, we're going to see that one again later. And we get a montage of different gonged acts. And a lot of these jokes are very much like piecemeal. Like, okay, that's good. Go to the next one. And the very best of these is the very large bird singing I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles, who just won't fit through the trap door. That... I know it's crass, but I like that. I will say that this because we do have cutaways to the mom and the dad throughout this, and they're not as interesting because they're not, you know, they're not an interesting character without Al Jolson in the room. So there is a great gag though of the mom turning on the radio as it goes on announcements, shipping forecast or whatever, and the mom going, I wonder if they found my little boy, and the radio responded, no, we didn't, lady. The SpongeBob people much so watch this.
Yeah.
Right before Al Jolson goes on, there's a telegram bit where the guy keeps forcing himself on the lady that I'm not sure what to make of.
Yeah, because on one hand, it's a sexual harassment gag. But on the other, she does succeed. She does succeed. We don't see him, but we do hear him like get pushed through a wall or something. So...
good.
He doesn't succeed. It's a fun gag, so...
eh. Right. Okay. Yeah, no, I guess it's a net win.
Yeah. This is the... right here, I experienced that twice of... is this...
Because, yeah.
It's iffy. But we do get this eventual ending bit, which is great, where Al Jolson absolutely nails his audition singing I Love to Sing It. And then once his folks show up at the window watching him, he immediately reneges and goes back to the hymn that he was singing earlier. And literally before then, the Jack Bunny was supposed to give him the trophy. And then when he hears this new hymn, he's like, oh God, this sounds horrible, and begins to put it away and spring the trapdoor. And the father comes in, tells him to stop gonging, and lets Al Jolson sing how he wants. What was that?
I just have Billy Bletcher yelling, stop. It's very funny.
Stop! Yeah. It's the same vein as Terry Gilliam in Monty Python and the Holy Grail as the old man from scene 32. Stop! What is your name? Well, I didn't know I had that impression in me. And we get this very happy ending with Al winning first place and unconditional love from his family. And it's a really sweet ending as they all sing together and they all get what they've wanted. And the folks have learned to really appreciate their son despite, you know, him not singing the kind of music they want. And it's a really great ending. And I also love the iris out where it leaves the trophy on screen and then Al Jolson has to iris back in and grab it. That's cool. So yeah, I still like this one a lot. It hasn't aged entirely well.
No, it's not.
Like there are some bits, like the telegram portion and a minor lyric in the extended song.
Yep.
And some other very minor aspects have docked off some points for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the central message that, you know, older generations shouldn't immediately write off new trends if it makes their children happy, is still really good. And it has a great sort of ending reconciliation. And so it's just a really satisfying early Warner effort. Because, again, I don't always love the really early, like, mid-30s Looney Tunes, Merry Melody stuff. But I really like this one. It's still a sentimental favorite. And I can appreciate it despite it not being perfect in some points.
Yeah, for me, this is perhaps one of the few, if only, Warner Brothers apes the Disney style that actually works story-wise. Gag-wise, it is very simple, but story-wise, it works so well, both as a story unto itself, as well as like a light jazz singer send-up. And for a jazz singer send-up, this is possibly the least possible racist version of the story told in a cartoon released at this time.
Exactly. No blackface.
Yes, because they're owls.
And most importantly, no Neil Diamond music.
Yes.
Tonight! Okay, so, this is probably going to be lower than you think I'm going to give it. I'm giving this a 4 out of 5. It's great.
As am
I. It's not perfect, but it's great.
As am I. Okay, good. As am I. I'm also giving this a 4 out of 5. Yeah, it's... And also, just a fun thing, because you brought up a Happy Feet a bit earlier. I watched this off of my old Happy Feet DVD because the story, which really think about it, is like, wait a minute. So them putting I Left a Singer on the Happy Feet DVD.
Oh, yeah, there was a reason behind it.
Yeah, because, like, it's been a while since I've seen Happy Feet, but, like, my first connection wouldn't be Happy Feet is the penguin version of the jazz singer. But it's not exact, but it's got like the basic bare bone structure kind of, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I have to imagine that George Miller must have seen Happy Feet once or twice before. George Miller must have seen I Love to Singer once or twice before making Happy Feet.
Yes.
Maybe he put it on for the Mad Max crew. This is a good one. This is what the inspiration was going for here. You know, we want it to be like I Like to Sing It. Isn't that right, Mel? Yeah, that's right.
That's what he put on to hype up everyone before filming Fury Road. Okay,
no, everyone. No, Mark, you don't understand. That's what the Doof Warrior, the guitar player in Mad Max Fury Road, is actually playing. I sing, I die, I sing again. I love to sing a Fury Road coming to theaters this July.
Oh, Lordy.
I'm honestly really glad we had a lot to say about that one, because I don't think we'll have quite as much to say about the next one.
Oh, no. So,
this is going to be quick, folks.
All right. Hey, everyone. Remember about 10 or so episodes back when I gave myself Hollywood Steps Out, which is literally a send-up of film stars of the time, and I felt like I was going to drown in it because I am not as film-heavy, star-heavy in the 40s. We were able to get by that smoothly. I don't know if we'll get by this one smoothly because neither of us aren't especially highly skilled of radio stars of the 1930s.
God, no. I mean, for Hollywood Steps Out, I could help you out there.
Right, yeah.
I could do, like, okay, that's Clark Gable, that's Jerry Colonna, that's James Cagney, so on and so forth. Here, I knew a few of these.
Yeah, a few, but...
But most of these I did not know. And a lot of this cartoon that hinges on the fact that you need to know all of these and what they do. Yeah. And so I don't know if I have a lot to say about this one.
I guess we'll find out. So...
Jesus.
This is Woods Are Full of Cuckoos. It was released on December 4th, 1937. Now, I couldn't find anything for December 4th. Some people were born that day, but like no one that we would know. There was one actor, Max Bayer Jr. Who was Death Row in Beverly Hillbillies? Okay, I know that show. Okay, there you go. And I told this to you, Jordan, but I was so miffed there was nothing going on that day because right underneath the information page that we use, it says, no, what happened at 37? And of course, the Hindenburg disaster was on May 6th. And unfortunately, we will never be able to unleash our Hindenburg jokes. What a travesty.
Oh, the humanity.
Oh, the humanity. All right. But, however, this short was directed by Frank Tashlin and written by Melvin Millar.
Woo!
Hey, look at that. We're back to Tashlin already. My throat's a little dry. I'm going to go get a water bottle, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Don't say anything stupid while I'm gone.
Aw, man. I couldn't think of a single modern pop song for Neil Diamond to sing. I feel really betrayed by my own self.
It's all right.
I didn't know enough of the words to driver's license. Red lights, stop signs.
I still fucking love you. Yes.
Tonight.
We're just going to go right into it.
Okay, Woods are full of cuckoos.
Oh, okay, here's something. So the voice actors in this.
The Woods are full of cuckoos.
Mel Blanc, Ted Pierce, and Ovia Almond. So these are the people that will be voicing all these people. So I guess the main thing about this cartoon is that it is a parody send-up of several different radio programs of this era, especially like community sing programs where people would tune into the radio station and the main purpose is you're supposed to sing along with the people who's singing on the radio. Which is
right.
A thing people did at the time. So...
yeah, thank God we don't have that shit anymore.
Yeah. So the cartoon begins with an owl named Owlcott. And he's satirizing the town crier radio program. And he's giving an introduction. And the radio station this is telecasting from is called Cuckoo. K-U-K-U. And if they had one more KU, then we would have a serious problem.
Oh, thank God.
So.
Tonight! What up, us? It's Mr. Krabs doing Neil Diamond, everybody. Where it began?
No. Okay. So, right off the bat, I had an issue with this, which is that the owl's mouth isn't animated properly. It's literally animated going like up and down, not really mastered with the words at all. So, right off the bat...
So, if your problems with this one started there, then, like...
oh, boy.
It's going to be a long one, because I just had broad problems.
That was the only, like, main animation problem I had. Everything.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so we're introduced to... this is the radio show, and... Ben Birdie shows up. And... is a parody of Ben Bernie, who's a radio star... and the joke being that Ben Birdie has a feud with Walter
Winchell.
Winchell, who is created as Finchel in this. And the joke, here's a little inside joke from the 30s that no one from the silent generation is going to get. Walter Winchell and Ben Birdie had a feud at the time, but it was a fake feud for publicity reasons.
Oh, you mean like Eminem and Sacha Baron Cohen?
Exactly. Or Olivia Rodrigo and Sabrina Carpenter. Supposedly. Oh. Supposedly.
Ooh, that's not going to be very topical when
No, of course not. Hey.
It's going out in May or whatever. Are people going to still be talking about, like, Olivia Rodrigo in fucking April or May?
Actually, yes, because High School Musical, the musical, the series comes back in May. So they will be talking about her.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
We're all in this together, people. Anyways, so.
Stop.
Oh, jeez. All right. So, they do this little bit, and then we get a caricature of someone I know. It's Milton Squirrel, which is based off of Milton Squirrel, who was a...
We know him.
Yes. He was an MC of the Gillette Community Sing, as well as being a vaudeville star who would appear on comedy roasts and... And famously on...
He'd be in the Muppet movie.
In the Muppet movie. He was on the Muppet show. He was on Saturday Night Live, where everyone hated
Bombed
him.
Bombed an SNL episode.
Bombed it. Completely. Yeah.
He took out his cock in front of like a bunch of the writers.
Yes.
No, really, he did.
He did. Look it up. It's true. So...
Yeah.
Also, okay, this is a total side thing, but you know how a thing is like when... The Muppets were on SNL, and John Belushi would call him the Muckin' Fuppets.
Yeah.
Brian Henson, apparently, when Jim Henson was on SNL, he brought his kids, or at the time, like teenagers. And according to Brian Henson did actually hear John Belushi say, "Here come the Muckin' Fuppets." So that is real. That's a confirmed thing that actually did happen. Of course.
And I wouldn't think Johnny Belushi would do it any other way. Right. As you can see, we're talking about other things because we don't want to talk about this fucking cartoon.
No, okay. So the Milton Burrow Squirrel, his bit is that he's Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Milton Squirrel's on screen for 5 seconds to introduce Wendell Howe, which is a send-up of Wendell Hall. And the bit here is that he's trying to tell the audience... Who is at this thing, by the way? So this is like a live radio show with a full audience.
Yeah, so why aren't we broadcasting it? Who's actually the audience if they're all just there?
So, and the joke being that he can't get the page number right. And eventually he just says, you know what? Let's just forget about the songbook. And everyone's like, oh, no, you don't. And they all throw the songbook at him.
Exactly. No, it's never mind. We won't use the books. Oh, yes, we will. That is a prime... That's, I think, my favorite gag in the whole thing. That it's a prime Frank Tashlin gag. There is another really good gag later on in it, but we have to get through a lot of gags that I did not get that aren't funny.
Yes, so together. Billy Goat and Ernie Bear, which is a parody of Billy Jones and Ernie Hare, and everyone else...
Wait a minute. His name is Ernie Hare. Why not make him a rabbit? Come on, fellas, you're losing your heads.
So.
Here under protest is the rest of this cartoon.
Exactly. So, then we get our song, which is called.
The Woods Are Full of Cuckoos.
The song's okay. Called The Woods Are Full of Cuckoos. It's cute. And I do like this little bit right here where a fox, which is based off of Fred Allen, and he's singing Swanee River instead of.
Swanee River.
The Woods Are Full of Cuckoos. And then a girl character says, You're singing the wrong song. And just the wolf just saying, why don't somebody tell me these things? Which, boy.
God bless Mel Brant.
Yeah. That was great. And boy, have I been there. And then we just get a caricature rundown. Of a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah. None of these work for me.
Seeing the Woods Are Full of Cuckoos. Because we've got.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. All right, we got Eddie Gander.
You don't need to list all of them, but like.
Okay, the ones that we bleeping know. Bleeping. The ones that we fucking know are W.C. Field Mouse, based off of W.C. Fields.
Yes.
Of course. And Bing Crosby.
Good.
And Al Jolson, which
they wouldn't even make him an owl again. They had continuity.
Had continuity, and I'll give him credit for not dropping a jazz singer, but he doesn't drop a jazz singer. He just has a bunch of garbled up thing that vaguely sounds like Al Jolson, I guess.
He does some usual shtick.
Yeah. And then Ruby Keeler, who was Jolson's wife at the time. Okay. And then we go to Grace Moose, which is Grace Moore, and Lily Swans, based off Lily Pons.
And they try and out high note each other. And that's at least a well animated.
You know what? It's very well animated. And honestly, when that moose shoot up, my first thought was Bullwinkle? Because it looked like a bull. So, yeah, so they do a high note off, and then eventually they just come down defeated. And then Martha Ray, whose character here has a mule named Mutha Bray, sings jazz. And then we just stop. We just stop with the radio stars and just go into a movie critic satire thing of Luella Parsons, which is based off of Luella Parsons. And I will say, this is like the worst time to bring this up. I watched a Woody Allen movie about a couple of weeks ago that is kind of based off of Luella Parsons' career, called Radio Days.
Okay.
And the Mia Farrow character, the entire movie, she wants to become an actress, but every single time she's about to go on, something happens that prevents her. There's one scene where she actually gets a role on a radio drama, and right when she's about to say her lines, the war starts. Like, they cut the broadcast because I think Pearl Harbor happens right when she's about to say her first lines on radio. So eventually she just takes up a speech class and becomes a gossip columnist on the radio. So that's how she gets her career. So then we get a little thing of, they got these actors and they're going to perform over the radio a scene from the newest Warner Brothers picture. And it's
Jack and Mary from the Jack Benny show, who we covered last week.
Yeah.
And it's Andy Devine, mm-hmm. who I know Andy Devine because he was on a Twilight Zone episode called Hocus Pocus and Mr. Frisbee, which is not one of the more well-known ones, but Andy Devine was known as playing like big boisterous hick type things. Mm-hmm. And he plays a boisterous type hick who gets abducted by aliens. And when he gets back, no one believes him because he tells all these tall tales. It's honestly a really good comic Twilight Zone episode. But Andy Devine is this big, loud, boisterous type. And he's cast as the baby in this.
Yeah, so it's just...
That cracked me up.
But by the way, I like how this is a radio show. And like... I guess because we're from an audience. So I guess for the audience, they cut to like a set. Like there's a set with chairs and a bed.
Yeah, and they're still in costume.
They're in costume and everything. So that just confused me. It's like, wait, it's supposed to be a radio show though. So why was it even, whatever. And the joke being that the Andy Devine character is playing a baby. So he loudly screams, hi ma, hi pa, of course, as he does that. The set just falls apart, and it's just...
Yeah. It's another early equivalent of, why, thank you, Pepper Boy!
Exactly. So,
yeah.
We end the cartoon with... it's such a white toast way to end a cartoon. It's just Owl Knot says, okay, well, I guess we're done here. All is well. All is well, as he rings a bell, and we iris out on that.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just the funniest thing? It's not. It's so
Look, if we lived in the 1930s and got the jokes, then maybe it'd be a little bit more interesting than this. But it's not interesting at all to me because I don't get it. I don't have much to say about it because it's entirely based off of empty likeness jokes that they didn't work as gags outside of just being based off of famous people. It's just nothing to me.
There's no real jokes in this. Like, no. I'll give Hollywood Steps Out this. There were jokes. They did yes. take what people knew of these Hollywood stars and played off of them, you know.
Yeah, and they only did that a couple of times in this one.
Yeah, it's... A lot of this is just, hey, it's this radio star, but they're an animal. That's all we got.
Yeah.
It's very boilerplate, and it's very simple. However, I will say,
yeah,
the animation in this was very well done. I like that.
Oh, yeah, it's really
it was very well animated. Even if it... And yes, this is a Cashlin short, but however, it doesn't have nearly the same energy as his other works. I think we're still around now that summer is gone in terms of time frame.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit after. I'm giving this a 1.5 out of 5 anvils.
I'm giving it a 2 out of 5. I'm slightly a bit more lenient due to the animation. But yeah, it's not great. Especially because I don't know most of it.
Yeah. So. Which that does sound like catty of us. Like, I don't understand it, hence it's bad. It's not that. It's just when your entire cartoon is based off of a specific thing, and that specific thing yeah. is so aimed at a specific point in time, at a specific area. I'm sorry, unless you studied the radio in a media college or whatever, just not gonna get it. Sorry.
Yeah. You know, you can't exactly predict which parts of your generation, which part of your society are going to age into the next several generations, right. But you've got to do a better job than this. Yeah. We should do a good one, though.
Yeah, should.
The last cartoon we're going to be covering today is one that we both really like because we both grew up with this one on the Golden Collections. Drink! This is Swooner Crooner. It was released on May 6th, 1944. I teased earlier that I had I had a lot of Japan related on this day's for these. This one is no question. On this day, Masanori Murakami, who was the first ever Japanese baseball player to pitch in the major leagues, was born on this day. This is a pretty cool thing because, like, there was a color barrier, obviously, for African Americans to play. There was a color barrier for people from South America to play. And then there was a little less talk about color barrier for Asian Americans or people from Asian countries. And Masanori Murakami pitched a couple of years for the San Francisco Giants, only got one baseball card, but was mostly a relief specialist, and paved the way for about 30 years later, a new Japanese wave of great players like Hideo Nomo, Hideki Matsui, Ichiro Suzuki, Yu Darvish, Shohei Ohtani, and countless others that have come from Asian countries like that. So... There couldn't have been a lot of the great Japanese players without him. So that's pretty cool if you're into that sort of thing. In theaters that day was Leo McCarey's Going My Way, that year's Oscar winner, starring Bing Crosby, one of the stars of this cartoon, along with Powell and Pressburger's A Canterbury Tale, which is in the Criterion Collection. A lot of people talk about Powell and Pressburger. I'm not very familiar with their stuff, but, you know, if you're a film snob, then that must be cool for you. This is a Frank Tashlin, Warren Foster script. This is the first Looney Tune to be reproduced as a Blue Ribbon cartoon. I think before this there was mostly Merry Melodies. This was nominated for the Best Animated Short Oscar at the 1945 ceremony, but loses to Tom and Jerry's Mouse Trouble. Fine. And some vocal notes here. I mean, Mel Blanc only really does the voice of
Porky and the chickens, maybe?
Porky.
Wait, no.
No, the chickens are, because he only does Porky. Because you got the chickens, and that's Sarah Berner and Bea Benaderet as the chickens. And then you have Richard Bickenbach, who provides the voice of both Bing and Frankie, both rooster caricatures of two of the biggest recording artists of that time, Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, while Sam Glasner does all the losing auditioners, including Al Jolson, Jimmy Durante, Cab Calloway, and Vaughn Monroe. So just know that when we get into that. Okay. So this is very much a product of being made during World War II, because the production of eggs in this sort of barnyard way is compared to the production of a lot of wartime products. And first of all, Flockheed, which is the name of this farm, is a reference to Lockheed Martin, I believe, who was responsible for a lot of weapons and things like that during the war. But this cartoon is basically a barnyardized version of assembly line work that people were doing for the war effort. And the big powerhouse montage early on, where it's just all of these chickens going down a conveyor belt, cements that. Lots of funny things throughout this montage as well. I love how the hens sort of stay on the conveyor belt as they go upside down and just are in the same pose. And then they're brought over to lay eggs, and there's this bashful hen who's just sort of smiling afterwards. Yeah. And I also love the little catcher's mitt that pops out to catch the falling egg.
Yeah, also I love how right before the conveyor belt scene starts, the chickens clocking in, great use of sound effects.
Oh yeah.
Because they just throw every single sound effect out the wall for each chicken that's clocking in, and it's just madness. And of course the powerhouse theme is I mean, you think conveyor belts, you think powerhouse.
Yeah, no, of course, and it works here. I do love the variation after this powerhouse thing of one hen not laying any eggs at all, being sent back on like a tilt signal, and then laying dozens like a slot machine, and then acting like she's won like a lot of money. That's great.
Yeah.
And then, around 2 minutes and 15 seconds in, we finally get the hook of the piece. The hens hear the voice of Frank Sinatra from outside the hen house. All of them start working and producing eggs to run over and fawn over him, who's doing an impromptu concert outside the house. And here we just get a lot of really good shots of just the hens reacting to him and just how he looks on the stage singing into an old tin of something. Just some really good animation work.
Yeah, and I love how as the chickens run off to see Frankie, I love how one of them is about to drop a bunch of eggs, and then as soon as she hears Frankie, it sucks all back into the chicken. Love it.
That's great.
Yeah. No, it's great. But yeah, no, just some really good, like, and also, all of the songs in this are real Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra songs performed by a professional impressionist of them both. So, like, it's great, and it's basically just played pretty straight of just all of these chickens reacting wildly to this Frank Sinatra music. And then I love Porky going upstairs to look in on the production and find numerous absentee signs from all the missing hens. Us too, ditto.
Ditto. I love
it's
that.
Great.
I love it.
I love it. And then, and I've talked about this, but just so many very creative ways of expressing how lovelorn all of these hens are. Just completely, one melts, one just sort of like, you know, goes up into the air, crashes down, and just like gets their beak stuck in the dirt. They're all like just so in love.
I love that one because that one I believe is a British hen. Goes Frankie.
Yeah,
it's
great.
Very nice.
So, of course, in response to this, Porky sets up this audition for other musicians, and yes, there is some jazz singing in here with Al Jolson.
This irked me. I mean, it should always irk you when a Al Jolson impression shows up. But when was this movie... Sorry, when was the show released again?
1944.
When was the original jazz singer out?
1927.
That's 17 years.
Mm-hmm. But he was still a very big star at that point.
Yeah, but think 17 years after the fact, they retired the Al Jolson jokes. Like, it'd be like if now, in 2021, that'd be like in 2021, we are still doing, like, I don't know, what's like an early 2000s thing that we don't do anymore? That would be horrible then if we were still doing it.
Voting in favor of the Iraq War?
I think more like impressions. I don't know. Like,
okay. Groping celebrities at red carpet events?
Like,
I'm missing the point, aren't I?
No. Because, okay, the thing that sucks about this moment in the short here is that they're doing an impression of something that's so old by this point, it shouldn't even be impersonated anymore. So what would be like?
What are you talking about? I still do a Christopher Walken.
I am offended.
Ah.
I still do a Neil Diamond impression.
No, stop. They know.
Tonight.
Anyways. I do love Calloway depiction, though.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No. Both the Jimmy Durante and the Cab Calloway ones are great. Like, just really good impressions and really good at summing up how different these guys were in this era. I'll make the other movie connection because, you know, I told you all who Cab Calloway was. Jimmy Durante is the old man who hides all his money under a big W and it's a mad, 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 mad world. So that's where you might know him from if you've ever seen that movie.
Yes.
Now, eventually, and then after these impressions, Bing appears as if from vacation, as he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, and immediately wins all the girls over. And then eventually, this just turns into a competition between Bing and Frankie as to who can produce the most eggs from under these hens. And just get more amusing as it goes, because just piles of eggs just appear under these hens, under the hen house, in droves. I also just love the just-hatched chick producing a giant egg and then wiping its brow. That is a Frank Tashlin joke right there.
That's lovely. I love that.
It's wonderful.
That's good.
Yeah. And then this ending is also great. Because it's just by nightfall, there's hundreds, thousands of eggs out there as they're finishing their concert. And Porky is astonished. He asks both Bing and Frankie, how did you guys do it? And Bing and Frankie only have to sing a little bit for Porky to produce a ton of eggs himself. That is fun.
Yes. And also, that's Mel Blanc's only line in this.
Yeah.
One single line from Mel Blanc in this, which I find interesting. Yeah.
He didn't need that much else because it was mostly just carried by the impressionists and by the shrieking girls. So it works. And this is a classic cartoon. The difference between this one and Woods Are Full of Cuckoos is that this uses likeness to prove a point and for comic means other than, hey, look at all these famous people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this cartoon also uses likenesses that thankfully pass the time, the test of time 77 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people in 2021 probably don't know who half the people in Woods Are Full of Cuckoos are. But if you say, hey, ever heard a Frank Sinatra song? They'll say, oh yeah, My Way, That's Life, so on and so forth. Or, hey, ever heard anything by Bill Crosby? Like, of course, White Christmas. So they picked two ones that thankfully are still kind of, not relevant, but well-known by a lot of people now. And so that helps. But, like, look, the animation, the comic escalation of the concept, all the music-centric stuff, they're all phenomenal here. And this is a very fun music-based Looney Tunes cartoon. And possibly one of the best non-character-based Looney Tunes cartoons of all time. Because Porky's only in this for a little bit, and he's not the hook of the piece.
So, pretty much what you said. I love how they handle the chickens. I love how just in all of their hoariness drops eggs left and right. The caricatures of Frank Sinatra and Bing, pretty well defined. The only, like, again, the only thing I had a real issue with was just like, hey, it's up to Jazz Singer. Let's still do a Jazz Singer joke. But besides that, I mean, I mean, the gag work especially was great. And this is definitely the most gag work of the three we've covered. And
yeah, definitely.
It's a Tashlin cartoon done right, but that as opposed to
exactly. Yeah. No, I think it's one of Tashlin's best. I give this a 4.5 out of 5.
I'm giving it a 4 out of 5.
Oh, okay.
All right. So.
All right. I forget what we're doing next week. I haven't checked in a while. What are we doing next week?
A controversial figure. That's what we're doing.
Uh-oh.
For next week's show, we're doing Dr. Seuss.
Oh, of all. Okay. Let's just make this 100% clear. We're recording this in March of this year.
Yeah.
Right when the right wing is getting up in arms about Dr. Seuss's people cutting the publishing of a couple of his books. And so right now is a very dangerous time to be talking about Dr. Seuss. I don't think it'll have subsided. I think it'll have subsided a lot by the time this goes out. Because like now Universal Studios is looking into, oh, maybe we should rebrand our Dr. Seuss world at Island of Adventure. No, because everything there is just the kid stuff that isn't racist whatsoever. Yeah. So you're good there. Don't get rid of that. That's great. Yeah. Just, you know.
So
I don't think there's anything that would profit off of any of the racist stuff. So, but yeah, we're Dr. Seuss. So we're doing like full length Dr. Seuss stuff, right?
Only one of them is full length.
Yes, so it's the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Yes, okay, so jump ahead. So what we're doing, we're going to do a Private Snafu cartoon. I don't know which one. I picked one, but we're going to do a Private Snafu cartoon because there's a kinship there between Dr. Seuss and Chuck Jones.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Horton Hatches the Egg.
Okay.
And we're ending with the full-length Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. So we're going to be talking about...
Which we will be watching in March.
Yes, we'll be watching a Christmas special in March.
Whose idea was this?
Well, hey, if we don't want to do How the Grinch Stole Christmas, we can do a Patty Freleng Seuss production.
No, okay. How the Grinch Stole Christmas it is.
Borat's adaption isn't that bad, though. I guess really had to. I guess we could do that. Anyways... Yes. So we're going to be covering the controversial world of Dr. Seuss. Add some puppets to that show.
The wobulously controversial world of Dr. Seuss.
That's the title. That's the fucking title.
Yeah.
There you go, folks. All right. So that's the... All right. So that's the end of our show. If you'd like to keep up with us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkCaleb1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at that_Looney or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find this podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes your Google Podcasts, your Spotify Podcasts, your Apple Podcasts. Player FM, Anchor, wherever the heck. You guys know what you're doing. I don't need to tell you this at this point. I can try them, you know, out of necessity.
So until next week, that's Jordan. I'm Mark. And we're going to leave you with Sweet Caroline, New Diamond Minute.
Where it began, I wasn't even listening. Woo! This wasn't my kind of podcast show. But we soldiered on. As I got back from pissing, doing a show about the radio. And tonight.